Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Hazard is with a good ball. Pulisic is onside here. He can finish, and he does finish. It's Pulisic for the USA. What a start. That's the first time he scored for the new coach, Berhalter.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm doing really well. Should be a fun podcast we got for you tonight. Lot to talk about. Lot to do.
Big podcast. We should almost begin right now instead of the usual nonsense.
Well, but there is some nonsense to get out of the way. First off, this is not nonsense. We do want to tell you that we got a couple guests on tonight's show. You and I are going to give our thoughts, obviously, on the U.S. men and how they looked in the most recent friendly against Chile. But Jeff Carlisle was there physically, and so he will give us his thoughts as well. He's going to call in and talk to us about some of that. And then later in the podcast, Craig Burley is going to come on because now the international break is over, kind of making that turn for home now. And we kind of want to check in with him about what to expect over these final several weeks of the season. Should be fun. And a little bit on the international stuff, too, because I do want to get some of his thoughts on what happened to England in Montenegro with more racist chanting from the crowd. We'll talk about it, too.
Depressingly predictable.
Yeah, you're right. That's actually a good way of phrasing it, sadly. And then one other thing on the podcast tonight. No one has really asked for this, and yet you have persisted and you have broken
me. Wait, no, hang on. A quick resume of what happened.
Okay.
Memphis Depay did his Instagram video of rapping.
Right.
Then there was a funny response from a Scottish footballer who does not make as much money as Memphis Depay, and we noted it. And I said, hey, why don't we do one?
Yeah, in case you needed reminding, this was Memphis.
5 million followers. You know, I appreciate the love. Y'all be watching me. Y'all see the journey.
Yeah, we all saw the journey, Memphis.
To hey. 5 million followers.
Yeah, you falling over your feet at Stoke. We all saw it.
But anyway, so that all happened.
That all happened, and we suggested it. And then typically, which we sometimes do on this podcast, we say things that we really want to do. People get enthusiastic, and we never do them. But to be fair to us, a lot of the time we followed through, but equally a lot of the time we don't. But
when do we not follow through? What are you even talking about? And by the way, who was enthusiastic about this idea?
Anyway, we have so little time to play with here.
All right, all right.
The point being, you wouldn't do it, and then you said, all right, I'll do it, but only once and before Liverpool v Spurs.
Yeah, because it made sense to do like a rap battle. So the Caught Offside Cup is this weekend, Tottenham and Liverpool, in what is actually a really big game for both teams.
It's massive for us.
I'd say it's massive for Spurs, too. And so we are, it's going to happen. We're going to rap battle later on in the podcast. Now, I'll say this. I was kind of like practicing a little bit, which in itself is just degrading and humiliating.
Hey, I'm Andy Gunling, and I'm here to say.
Oh, yeah. That. I don't hate some of like my lyrics, but dude, I would say to everybody out there, whatever you're thinking,
just cringe.
Whatever you're thinking that this is going to be right now, take those expectations and just bring them down a little bit, all right?
I think people are in for the cringe.
EPL, back for more. Like, potentially worse.
I mean, that was kind of a rap.
That was Billy Joel rocking out.
That was his
Premier League lyrics.
That was white guy Long Island rap.
JJ, we said we would talk about this, and of course we will.
America is back!
That's right. It's another Berhalter match and another not loss. A draw against Chile.
In the first proper game we've really had.
Yes, I would very much agree with that. Now, for the U.S. and for Chile, too, to a certain extent, not a full squad. Obviously, Tyler Adams was sent back to Germany in what appeared to be an agreement that they had with Leipzig that he'll just play the one match and then he'll get back there.
Enough
he's now
this.
Become like a very important part of Leipzig's push for a Champions League spot.
Enough of your nonsense, Greg. We're having him back.
Yeah, I could only surmise that the same was probably true of John Brooks. Obviously, there was no Weston McKennie, who unfortunately looks like he might be done for the season, suffering ligament damage in his ankle, which sucks. So it was not a full U.S. squad, but nevertheless, you know, another look at Pulisic. Some other players brought back into the fold, like Omar. I was so shocked when I saw Omar Gonzalez was going to be starting at center back. So this was, you know, it was fun to see the U.S. go up against Chile, who were playing their style with big names like Arturo Vidal was out there, Maurizio Isla was out there. And it was fun. And it started off fun. We played the Pulisic goal for you. It was a great first few minutes from the U.S. to get that goal. Giassi Zardes, I couldn't even believe what I was seeing with his first touch, which everyone loves to make fun of, unfairly.
Yeah, you also couldn't believe that the Chilean center back completely lost his GPS and ended completely lost the flight of the ball, and the Red Sea opened up for Giassi.
Yeah, and so this was good. And Berhalter spoke after the game about how, you know, and even at halftime, that this is what he wanted. Like, he wanted a team to test them, to really, you know, make it difficult for the U.S. to do the things that they want to do. And I think we saw a lot of that. Now,
he did sound a little bit like the guy who you bet to eat the super hot pepper. And he's halfway through and he's hating every minute of it. And you ask him, how are you doing? I'm actually loving it.
No, I think Berhalter really, truly wanted this. Like, he wants these guys to be tested. Ecuador was not, I don't think that's what he envisioned. A game with a team that was just going to pack men back and just not play at all. Like, I think he wants this. He wants to know, okay, I have said that I want to play coming from out of the back. Do I have guys who can do that? We didn't learn that against Ecuador, but I think we're starting to see more of that in a game against Chile. Now, I like that Berhalter is going to use these games to experiment on things like that.
I agree.
Having said that, watching them play out of the back at times, it was just the ultimate in, like, me tensing up and just...
I think using the term play out from the back is rather grandiose for what essentially was complete panic. Awkward technique and oftentimes just surrendering the football after a few panicked shoves of it up the field. It was poor. He may have discovered that his goalkeeper is not suited to that style of play. He may also have discovered something that we probably knew anyways, that Tim Ream, as a left fullback...
Well, you didn't like that back pass from Ream?
The blind back pass. I mean, he could do that at centre-back still. I mean, you know, but he's definitely uncomfortable in that position. Yeah, he saw a lot of things. He will have learned a lot from that game. Some good, a lot not great.
But he needs the not great.
Of course, like, he does.
To get better, he needs to see what the weaknesses are.
Well, there was moments where you're like, okay, he's going to stick to his playing out from the back, particularly in the first half. He's going to stick with his press in midfield. There was one moment which kind of summed everything up for me in a little caption. It's where Arangis has got the ball, by the way, who is... I mean, just a magnificent midfielder. And you know, you can tell this Chilean team has been through the international ups and downs. They are a hardened team. And he is pressed by Bradley and Christian Roldan at once. And he just skips a pass between the two of them, completely takes them out of the play, and puts Chile on the front foot. And this is the standard of opposition we're talking about. So when we were talking last week about, hey, we need to slow down, these aren't the guys we need to be concerned with, we have smaller fish to finally deal with. That is true. And maybe it's going to mean that he has to find two different ways to play. One against the opposition that he's going to be regularly against in CONCACAF Gold Cup, and one against the really elite teams, which we hope to play
in the World Cup.
We qualify for a World Cup.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, on the line with us now, Jeff Carlisle, who was there for this one in Houston, U.S. and Chile. He is back home now, and he is on with us on the program. Jeff, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're good. I guess I want to start with this. After the Ecuador game, I think the going line about what we had seen was, yeah, but it was an Ecuador team that really had no interest in taking part in the game, it seemed like, so we can't really say we learned much. What about the Chile game, though? It seemed like that was a little bit more competitive. Is it fair to take away some actual conclusions about where the U.S. are at following that game?
Yeah. You know, certainly it was, you know, their toughest test yet under Greg Berhalter, and... you know, I think, you know, as I wrote yesterday evening, the U.S. got pushed out of its comfort zone. And in some ways that was good, and in some ways it wasn't so good. You know, I think in terms of being pressed and, you know, trying to play out of the back and trying to adhere to the style that Greg Berhalter is trying to implement, I think... You know, we saw some good things, and we saw some not so good things. I mean, there were times where I thought the U.S. broke the pressure really well. You know, I can remember, you know, one instance where, you know, Michael Bradley was able to find Corey Baird with a long diagonal ball and created a good chance. And unfortunately, you know, Baird wasn't really able to get, you know, his best contact on the ball. But there were other times where it looked really rough. I mean, I'm thinking of the Chilean goal where the U.S. had a couple chances to really, you know, just clear their lines, you know, get the ball out of their end, you know, relieve some pressure a little bit. And Chile was just able to keep ramming it down their throats, and ultimately the U.S. broke. And I thought defensively the U.S. looked really shaky for the first 20 minutes. I thought after that they calmed down a little bit. You know, Berhalter made some tactical tweaks. You know, he dropped Christian Roldan a little bit deeper alongside Michael Bradley, and then they kind of went to that. Well, Berhalter called it 3-4-1-2, I think, but I'm calling it 5-4-1. That's what it looked like to me from the press box. But it was a pretty narrow four-man midfield, and really they were just trying to get a little bit more security. So, I think, you know, you could draw some conclusions, and I think the U.S. has got a long way to go. I do like that they're being brave, but, you know, you wonder when the games start for real, you know, I'm thinking of like the Gold Cup this summer, if they're going to continue to be that brave and how well it's going
to
work.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, Jeff. Considering how bombastic's not the right way to say it, but considering how open Berhalter was in his desire for this team to be expansive, to play out from the back, to press, do you think that last night was maybe chastening a little bit, and that he may consider that now there will be two distinct styles of play? One style of play will be maybe the Columbus model, where he can definitely implement all those things he talked about in January, and the second style of play will be for the really good teams like the Chilis of this world.
Yeah, and I think there's an additional wrinkle in that. I think the additional wrinkle is Christian Pulisic on the field, or is he not? Because I think over both of these last two games, I mean, the U.S. just looked almost completely different, just in terms of what they were able to create, in terms of how dynamic they were going forward. You know, I think, you know, the first time, you know, against Ecuador, the substitution was planned. I mean, they were trying to manage Pulisic's minutes, but obviously he had to come off early against Chile, you know, after about 35 minutes with a quad injury. And I think in both instances, the U.S. just didn't look the same in terms of their attack. I mean, they didn't look nearly as fluid. They weren't really able to find a rhythm, especially against Chile. I thought they were really just kind of trying to make sure they were defense first, you know, making sure they were tight at the back, and then whatever scraps they got, you know, that was fine. And I credit Berhalter for being adaptive, and the players too, for, you know, having these different formations thrown at them. I mean, Berhalter made the comment that they hadn't really practiced some of these before, but, you know, they were able to grind out a result. But you kind of wonder, you know, is the day ever going to come when this team isn't 100% dependent on Christian Pulisic to create chances and to provide a dynamic attack? I mean, we really have yet to see it. And so I think that's a big concern going forward. I mean, I think for the most part defensively, the U.S. has looked pretty solid in these four games in 2019, but the attack, it's been a little rough. And without Christian Pulisic, it's really rough.
Jeff, one guy that I'm interested about is DeAndre Yedlin, because coming into these friendlies, it seems like, you know, he's being talked about as playing in like so many different positions. Is he playing out wide in the midfield? Is he a fullback? Is he a wingback? Are you getting a sense of where Berhalter would most like to see him play?
I still think it's as kind of a standard outside back. You know, certainly when they went to five in the back, you know, he kind of, you know, Yedlin went obviously into wingback mode. But I think the whole, another wrinkle in this is where, you know, Berhalter trots out this kind of hybrid right back center midfielder that we saw Nick Lima occupy in the January games, and then Tyler Adams against Ecuador. And you kind of get the sense that that's not a system that really fits DeAndre Yedlin. I don't think he's quite good enough on the ball to kind of, you know, play that like center midfield role. You know, he is good going forward. He's kind of just providing some classic wing play. But again, that Adams-Lima role is not one that really suits him. So it seems incredible, because this is a guy who's getting regular games in the Premier League.
I know.
and yet he's not really an automatic first choice for the U.S. at the moment. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how things develop for Yedlin at international level going forward. I mean, Berhalter made him captain last night, so I think he was trying to throw him a bone a little bit to say, hey, you are important to me. You are in my plans. You know, don't think that I'm not, you know, just ignoring you. But, you know, if Berhalter's preferred tactical approach is to again, have this kind of hybrid inverted fullback, it's tough to see how DeAndre Yedlin is going to play a big role going forward. But, you know, we'll see, you know, when the June friendlies come and then the Gold Cup, obviously, and, you know, that will certainly provide a little bit more data.
Jeff, it's time to give you some praise because I didn't see this anywhere except in your piece on ESPN FC about the game last night, where you pointed out quite correctly, and obviously because I concur, it means we're both just great football men. Ethan Horvath's positioning on the Chilean goal was when you watch the replays, was quite something, how close he was to that near post. But generally, not just the goal aside, mistakes can be made. In general, if you look at that and you add in the fact that his kicking was poor, his distribution was poor, is there a good chance that Berhalter will have seen pretty much all he wants to see from Ethan Horvath last night and that Zach Steffen has further cemented his place without doing anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable assumption to make. I mean, when Steffen has been available, you know, he's been pretty much the guy to play. It was not Horvath's best game. I mean, he's really been kind of almost a Jekyll and Hyde character for the U.S. I remember when he played against Portugal, you know, that first game after Cuba, obviously he lets in that horrible goal. But then against Italy, he was brilliant and seemed to be really playing with a lot of confidence that comes from, you know, having, you know, three consecutive clean sheets in the Champions League. So it was unfortunate for him that they ended up losing the game that night. But certainly, you know, from our angle, you know, watching on the you know, from the press box, you're thinking, man, you know, the Chilean guy, he really ripped that shot and it must have gone right in the corner, but it kind of caught a good solid chunk of the middle of the goal.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that Horvath's positioning I thought it was pretty suspect in that instance. You know, it's kind of the goalie positioning system. You know, you kind of have your internal radar, and for whatever reason, he felt like he really needed to hug that near post. I mean, he is a tall, lanky guy, so maybe he thought he could get over, but you know, that shot was hit with some venom, and he would have, I think he could have taken a good step to his left and still managed to cover all the parts of the goal that he needed to.
He may not have been great, but some guys who I thought actually were decent, you know, there's a lot of criticism around Giassi Zardes, especially his first touch, but he had showed a pretty nice first touch last night in helping to set up the Pulisic goal. I thought Michael Bradley was really good last night. I mean, who were some of the guys that you thought maybe saw their stock rise a little bit, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bradley did play well, but it's interesting how all these managers keep wanting to make him like the sole holding midfielder. And it gives him an awful lot of ground to cover, and you know I'm wondering why they're doing that. I mean, I suppose that's a question for Greg Berhalter for another day. But you know, 15 minutes into the match, I mean, Christian Roldan was dropped in, you know, pretty much alongside Michael Bradley. I mean, that was kind of like the first tactical tweak that Berhalter made. And you know, Diego Valdez and Arturo Vidal, I mean, they were finding these pockets and not really being accounted for. And there was a lot of indecision on Tim Ream's part about, man, do I pinch in to try to cover Vidal? But then they were hitting these long diagonal balls to Mauricio Isla out wide. So, I mean, it left Tim Ream with some tough decisions to make. So I think for a long time now, Michael Bradley, if you're going to put him on the field, he can't be the sole like number six. You know, Berhalter likes to talk about these dual number tens that he likes to play with, but you know, the guys that have been playing centrally, you know, Will Trapp and Michael Bradley, I'm not sure you can put either one of those guys back there by themselves. And so, yes, I think Bradley played well, but it comes with a caveat for me. Zardes, I mean, I'll be blunt. I did not think that assist. I mean, it was the takedown and then the touch forward to Pulisic. I didn't think he had those kinds of tools in his bag at all heading into last night. But I give the guy credit. I mean, he made that goal. And, you know, his hold-up play was a little bit ragged sometimes. I think there was one pass where it was, the alarm bell started to go off. He played it, right to the opposition. But, I think he's done enough for the moment to continue to earn Berhalter's trust. I mean, the big question is, what happens when Jozy Altidore is ready to come back, to the national team? I mean, he's gotten back on the field. I don't think he was quite fit enough to participate in this camp. But, I mean, Altidore is very much in Berhalter's plans. He was at the January camp. Even though he couldn't play, I mean, he stopped by to kind of soak it in and try to get a feel for how Berhalter's doing things. So, I mean, we're going to see Jozy Altidore again. I did think that Will Trapp probably had his best half, in a U.S. shirt against Ecuador. I mean, again, the diagonal balls that he was pinging wide to Paul Arriola, I mean, those were, some of the best U.S. chances came from those moves. So, I think Trapp helped himself. I think Aaron Long has probably helped himself more than anyone. I mean, I'm thinking back, 3 or 4 months ago, even though Matt Miazga was having a difficult time at Nantes, I think most people probably had him, myself included, had him penciled in as a starter. But I think Aaron Long is really pushing to get more minutes. And there was a little bit of rumblings kind of around the press box last night about why play Gonzalez and Miazga in the tougher game against Chile. Why not go with Brooks and Aaron Long? I mean, Berhalter's collecting data, and I think, I wonder if there wasn't some kind of deal with Brooks and his club to, hey, play the first game, sit out the second one, so you kind of come into the weekend, club fixture fresh. But Aaron Long, for me, has really come a long way. And, Miazga, I mean, even though the irony is now he's getting steady minutes at Reading, he's escaped his nightmare at Nantes. But, I mean, Aaron Long is definitely pushing him, and so that competition is going to be one to watch for sure going forward.
Jeff, good stuff, man. I guess it's a little bit of a wait now until we start to gear up really for the Gold Cup, and I'm sure we'll be in touch between now and then as this team continues to develop. Thanks for your time.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks to Jeff. I guess last bit on this before we move on to some of the other friendlies. Anybody not there? We mentioned McKinney, Adams. Anyone not taking part in the game last night against Chile that you think in a game of consequence would be? We talked about John Brooks too. Like, what about Jozy? Is he still Jossie's artist? Even if he's playing well, I think he's worked his way onto the team, but I don't know that he's starting ahead of Jozy still.
Well, Jozy's not fit.
Nine.
So when
but I'm talking about this. Like, I'm looking ahead to the summer.
Yeah, no, Jozy is still going to be very much to the forefront of his mind. We have a paucity of strikers. That is just a fact. You're on about creativity. If Pulisic's not there, striker-wise, wow.
Yeah, yeah, there's a dearth.
I went with paucity, you went with dearth. Yeah. It's nice English.
Let's see, JJ. A couple other things to discuss on the international break, and one of them, unfortunately, is really negative. England-Montenegro. The result for England in both of their games was positive, very positive. But once again, racial abuse being hurled towards Danny Rose, Raheem Sterling as well. What was the phrase you used earlier?
Depressingly predictable.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. This continues to happen. And we've seen, was it Croatia that had to play behind closed doors for a match? This time now it's Montenegro. And it's also discouraging because, it's not inborn in you as a fan to do these things. Fan behavior is a learned behavior. This is a generational thing. Like, this isn't going to work its way out of the game. England are going to go back to some of these places, and this is going to continue to happen and happen and happen. And I don't know. I don't know what the fix is. I feel like seemingly everything, well, not everything, but so many, behind closed doors has been tried. Fining the Federation has been tried, which is a complete and utter joke for anyone who thinks that will have any kind of impact.
Well, the fines are never big enough to make any impact anyway.
And why would that ever be a thing that the fans would care about? Like, how does that affect the fan in any way,
shape, or form? Most of the fans hate their federations.
What I kind of wish would happen is, and this is a small thing, but it's a thing that I don't really recall seeing. I kind of wish, like, I'd have to go back and see who was the captain for Montenegro. Do you even know off the top of your head?
No.
I kind of wish that guy would, like, yell at his fans. Like, whether it be like, get on.
It's not how it works, though. They won't do that. The manager.
But that's what I'm saying.
The manager.
They should.
The manager came out of Montenegro came out and said, I didn't hear it. I mean, none of them ever hear it.
Look, now that is possible with where they're at. You know, maybe I don't want to call them liars for feeling that way, but you're right. I have to believe at some point, some player, where the manager is sitting, I don't know what he can hear or can't hear, but players are all over the field and they're in, you know, I would think that somebody would hear it, and it's got to get back to the captain. I think it has to fall on a player. I know that's putting a lot on players to do something like that, but they have to stand up to. He has to walk over to Danny Rose and put an arm around him, or something like some sort of symbolic gesture, like what you always heard about Pee Wee Reese doing to Jackie Robinson in Cincinnati when fans were killing him there. Pee Wee Reese walked over and put an arm around Jackie. Like somebody from the opposing team in front of his own fans needs to do something.
The ultimate gesture would be for the opposing team to hear it, acknowledge it, and then walk off the field first themselves.
Yes.
I can't see these things happening. It's interesting. We talked about sanctions. Sanctions have been spoken about a lot. A lot of players have talked about the ultimate sanction, and Craig Burley mentioned it, of removing a team from the international competition. John Barnes was very interesting on TalkSport, and he says sanctions don't work. And I think we've got some audio here from what John Barnes said, and it's definitely a different approach.
The problem you have when you just want to pass laws is that we heard some monkey chants in Montenegro, mm-hmm. which is illegal, so therefore you can close down the stadium and you can make them play behind closed door. But if they decided not to make monkey chants, if they decided just to boo every time a black player got the ball and we know exactly what they're doing, it's not illegal to boo. And if you made it illegal to boo, you'll then clap. And it's not illegal to clap. So that's the point I'm making is that laws can't change the way you actually feel, because there are always going to be ways around making something legal, but you can still be racist. So why don't we try making them change their minds about why it's wrong to be racist rather than just passing laws? They decide to boo black players every time they get the ball. That is not, you can't sanction them for that, because
no.
Booing is legal.
As
I said, and if you're going to say we're going to ban booing, then you can do something else. So sanctions do not work. When you're tackling an ideology, sanctions do not work, because there are always ways around it. So yes, I understand in terms of the overt racism, in terms of monkey chants or bananas, yes, you can do that. But how is that going to change people's perception on different groups of people? And it's only through education in society. Football is not separate from society. It's a part of society. And until we start to tackle it in society, then it'll never change.
Isn't that ultimately what we're dancing around here? The fact that
this is not a sports issue.
This is a societal issue, and that all we are doing with sanctions is saying, I don't want to hear that. We're not curing anything. We're going to take this out of our football grounds. But it doesn't change how people feel in their hearts or in their minds. And ultimately, it'll find a way to rear its head.
Well, that's why I'm so like gung-ho on a player making the statement. Because like that will humble a buffoon in the stands that thinks it's okay when he sees his own guy. Or like you say, if his team walks off the field because of that. Like, you know, that is a, like, I'm the moron now. Look how dumb I now feel that, like, my own guys are looking at me and, you know, embarrassed by my behavior.
Gareth Southgate was interesting in the sense that he said, I'm not really in the best position to talk about this. I'm paraphrasing, though, because he says it happens back home, too. Don't forget the incidents we've had at Hibernian, the incident we had at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I mean, Raheem Sterling's unbelievable performances this season have also come with the side note, oh, and he was racially abused. That to me is so thoroughly depressing.
Yeah, here is some of what Southgate had to say about the incident.
Reflecting on, should I have done more? You know, in the end, I think I try to protect my players as much as I possibly can. I'm not the authority on the subject. I'm a middle-aged white guy speaking about racism. It's not something that I really have I'm just finding it a really difficult subject to broach, because I want my players to enjoy playing football and not be scarred by the experiences, and if people feel I should have done more, then I can only apologise for that.
I mean, he's genuinely broken up that he is having to talk. Not that he's having to talk about this. How should I phrase this? That this is the reality.
Well, what's the more people referring to, that he should have pulled his team off the field?
Yeah, I think he feels somewhere. He feels helpless, really, and he's wondering should he take the ultimate action, which is to pull his players off the field, yeah. To take them all off.
I think next time maybe he will.
I think there's a real chance. At some point, it's got to get to breaking point. By the way, it's, what is it, 15 years since England played in Spain that night when those English players were audibly abused. The game was a friendly against Spain on the BBC, and you could hear the monkey chants. And I was watching the game. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it then. We're still in the same place. It's so wrong. And you've got to wonder about people.
Yeah, you're totally
and,
right.
And the societies they're growing up in, and the homes they're growing up in. The schools they go to, the places where they go to, the bars they drink at, where obviously this kind of conversation and this kind of looking down on another human being is somehow given credence. Incredible. Yeah.
JJ, I would imagine that, changing gears, Juventus hearts are kind of in mouths right now as we await word of Cristiano Ronaldo's injury and the extent of it that he suffered in Portugal's qualifier over Serbia. He says that it's minor, that he'll be fine.
I better do his voice.
Oh.
I am not worried. I know my body. It happens. It's football. I am fine because I know I will come back in 1 week or two.
Hmm. So he's a doctor.
Corriere della Sera say he will miss games versus Empoli, Cagliari and AC Milan in an attempt to be fit for the Ajax game.
That game is on April 10th, I believe, the first leg.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a doctor.
Oh.
But if we're to go by the rule of, well, he looks after himself, he's a fit boy, then nobody has a better chance of getting back than Ronaldo. We shall see.
That is true. Also, I don't want to sound demeaning here of Ajax, because they were really impressive in their round of 16. But you're
going to be.
Well, a little bit. Like, Juventus are waltzing to yet another title in Serie A. You can't take anyone lightly, of course, but like, they should be able to not have Ronaldo and still think highly of their chances against Ajax.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't, if I found out he's not playing, I don't know necessarily that will totally swing the way I feel about how that is going to turn out.
I think over two legs. I think psychologically, striker wise, as a focal point of the attack, I think you're wrong there.
Okay.
I think that Ajax will take great, great heart from that.
Yeah, well, of course, Ajax would rather him not play.
I think it's more than that. I think it blunts Juventus significantly.
And they'll lose. Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry. Look at what Ajax did.
I'm just asking.
Look at what they've done so far. Look at the way they play more than that.
All right. Yeah, I'm not saying they're not good, but I think really highly of Juventus and the team that they have,
I want to do a Mourinho on you right now. Walk out of the room shouting respect,
oh,
respect.
God. Why don't you do that? While you do that, JJ, I'm going to tell you about something. I'm going to tell you right now about ZipRecruiter. JJ, because hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. They've got powerful matching technology, and with that technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, listeners to our podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside, OFFSIDE, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. JJ, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we've got Craig Burley, who's going to talk a little bit more about some of what you're talking about with England and Montenegro and that incident there, plus with what to look forward to in the final stages now of the Premier League season, plus the rap battle. It draws near. There's no hiding from it now. This is really a thing that is happening.
I can't believe it.
Stay tuned.
I stuck with it.
Yo, B, they're calling your name. You drew Licky Split in the first round. You okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
With B-Rap. B-Rap. There you go. Got everybody waiting.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. That's right, JJ. We're getting closer to the rap battle. That was 8 Mile, in case you couldn't tell what was happening there.
Long time since I've seen it.
Yeah. It's when he's like back in like the locker room getting hyped up. That's us right now. But before that, the Premier League is getting ready to return. The international break is over. So we thought this would be a great time to have Craig Burley back on the show as we kind of head into like the stretch run here and looking ahead to the remainder of the season. Craig, what's up, man? How are you?
Yeah, I'm revitalized after the internationals. It was either, I don't know what you boys think, it was either brilliant or it was a bore fest.
Unfortunately, one of the big issues coming off the international break that JJ and I were talking about before you came on is what happened with England and Montenegro. Now, look, obviously there's no easy solution to fix this. If there was, obviously we would have done it by now to get racism out of the game. But what is the best course of action here? People talk about fining federations, which is nonsense. People talk about playing, you know, in empty stadiums. I mean, what is the move to try to eradicate this from the sport?
So difficult. It's so difficult. I you know, you kind of get to the stage where you think you have to. Do you have to take the ultimate? Make the ultimate, you know, decision and ban the country from, you know, qualification and ultimately the championship. And that is ultimately, I think, the severest punishment you could probably push on a nation. But what are the consequences of that? I don't know. You know, from, you know, I certainly know from my point of view, playing in a Euros and in a World Cup, had that chance been taken away from me because of, you know, moronic behaviour in a crowd, it's really difficult. But I don't see how a continuation of the softly approach is going to make a difference, because it's been proven over decades now that it's just not making a difference. So I think ultimately they're going to have to really sledgehammer somebody to see if that makes the point get across, and that ultimately could be banning a nation from a championship. And if that doesn't work, hell, I don't know what will.
Yeah, I don't know. Craig, did anything work in terms of the sectarian divide when you were at Glasgow Celtic? Were there any initiatives that you know, we'll say, stop the sectarian chants, or was it just, look, just kind of accept it?
I'm sure there were initiatives, JJ. I didn't really get involved too much in the sort of outside the football scenario. For the reason, as you know, it's a very murky world, and it's very deep-rooted and historic. But I'm sure there are lots of decent people out there who are trying their damnedest to make this sort of go away. But as you know, and it's been highlighted again recently in that particular part of the world, that it's a difficult disease and mindset to get out of the modern day, and it's disappointing all round. But it's kind of where we are at the moment, or, you know, I suppose around the world with the political. I don't want to get in too much, but with the politics around the world, not just here in the States, but across Europe, everything's very bitter and twisted at the moment, and it's feeding its way back into the game of football as well.
Craig Burley joining us here on Caught Offside. Craig, a player who is playing more for England than he is for his domestic club, Callum Hudson-Odoi, is somebody who really intrigues me, mainly for that reason. Like this rarity of a guy who is more of a national team player than a club-level player. What do Chelsea do with him? I mean, they have this transfer ban coming up. Can they really let him leave, or does Sarri kind of have no choice but to at least give this guy a little bit of a run?
Well, this is a difficult one because, you know, clearly he's another one of the conveyor belt of talent. And you know, Bayern Munich have been muted as well. I think Bayern Munich are interested. I don't think it's been muted as interested to sort of backtrack a little bit there. And you know, the Bundesliga has shown itself, not only for American players here, but for youngsters around the globe, to be a very intriguing and excellent platform for younger guys. And, you know, also on top of that, the chance to go and play for Bayern Munich, who are trying to re-energise the squad with the exit of Robin and Ribery and the older guys, and then going down the Gnabry and the Kingsley Coman, and they're signing Pavard but probably Lucas Hernandez, the French fullbacks who are early 20s. So that opportunity has got to be eye-opening for the kid, and to get possibly get game time as well, that's the key. You know, and when he looks at the Chelsea scenario, what he's got to ask himself is, what, the transfer ban is pending. It looks like it's going to happen, but I'm sure there's some legal wrangles. The second thing he's got to ask himself is, who's going to be the manager of this club? Because that's huge for him. And there is still a huge doubt at this moment in time if Maurizio Sarri will be managing Chelsea Football Club next season. And so he's in a real quandary at the moment between, you know, the club don't really want to sell him. He's not getting enough game time. The management structure may change. Eden Hazard may go to Real Madrid and they might not be able to sell anybody, so that's more chance of getting game time. But Christian Pulisic is coming in. It's a very murky, some very murky waters for him at the moment. But the good news is, as you, I'm sure you're well aware, he's very young. He's got lots of time with his hands. He needs to make the right decision, but to get game time is essential. And Maurizio Sarri played him in the Europa League and he played great. And then 4 or 5 days later, or 4 days later, he went to Everton and he wasn't playing again. And Chelsea were awful and they lost. And it's a real head scratcher for the kid. And it's, you know, it's a decision that is a difficult one all round. I don't think people realise how difficult a scenario this can be, because if you make the wrong decision, it can have a huge effect in the next 5 or 6 years of your career.
Craig, you're talking there about not knowing who the manager of Chelsea will be. We don't know for sure who will be the manager of Manchester United going forward. Louis van Gaal had some interesting comments to make, as he always does. I'll be honest with you. We need to talk to Louis more because he's very quotable. He said to in an interview with Simon Stone of the BBC, "The media do not analyse the game; they analyse the result." The coach after me, Mourinho, changed to park the bus tactics and played on the counter. Now there is another coach who parks the bus and plays on the counter. The main difference between Mourinho and Solskjaer is that Solskjaer is winning. I found those comments curious, but maybe there is something in them. What do you think?
Well, Solskjaer's not all of a sudden the messiah, right? And I think this is where you know, fans get carried away. I mean, we had a poll on our FC show, or on ESPNFC.com, I can't remember where it was, but it was a poll somewhere about Solskjaer getting the job. This was a week or two ago, and 91% said they wanted him to get the job. But, you know, if you, you know, and people were saying, well, Pochettino, who is the guy that's been mentioned the most, hasn't won anything, blah, blah, blah. But he's got a long-term plan, he's got a long-term CV, well, relatively, of building a squad, and Tottenham are in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, and building a good team. And I always say, if you were managing a team that wasn't Man United, and you were given a choice between Maurizio Pochettino and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who would you take? And I think it's a simple Maurizio Pochettino, because Solskjaer's been in the job sort of 3 months, and he's had a couple of iffy jobs elsewhere. And, you know, I think there is an element of the new manager bounce from Man United, but that's not taken away from what he's done. But what I think, JJ, that and we were talking about this in the show tonight, primarily because it's the end of the international week and we've nothing else to talk about.
Right.
Was that Van Gaal is basically, on an arrogance level of 1 to 10, he's 12. He's basically, and without mentioning his own style of football, he's saying to the Man United fans, see, you think, you know, these two are, you know, you're lauding Solskjaer and you're criticising Mourinho and that the football's all bad, but the football I played was actually much better. I think ultimately that's what he's trying to say in his own kind of arrogant, discreet way, without actually spitting it out in those words.
Well, it's funny. Sorry, Craig, to cut across you. It's funny the way he put it together. He said, but the way Manchester United are playing now is not the way Ferguson played. It is defensive, counter-attacking football. If you like it, you like it. If you think it is more exciting, and this is the phrase that got me, then my boring attacking, okay, but it is not my truth. So, I mean, I don't know, boring attacking. The two terms don't usually go together, but I think you're right in terms of...
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, sorry, that's him. It's basically, Stevie Nicol was talking about it tonight. We were both talking about it, but it's always sort of me. So see, me, mine wasn't so bad. You know, he's still. I think he's very much because he's retired now.
Yeah,
and he's got a great CV. Listen, Solskjaer will never have the CV of Mourinho and Van Gaal. Right, he's not. He's got the. You know, and listen. Good luck to Solskjaer. I don't think he should be the Man United manager long term because I think pegging back Liverpool and Man City and then pegging back the real big clubs in Europe is going to be a arduous, long and costly task that needs somebody that knows what they're doing, and that's not him. But if you want to get carried away with the on the wave, then fine. And listen, Solskjaer might have to get it because nobody else is... Well, nobody else of the standard that they want is available. You know, Pochettino, you know, Daniel Levy in Tottenham might somehow manage to say no. You know, Allegri at Juventus, who's had some problems with the board and as an experienced manager, you know, might not be available. So they might have to come to Solskjaer. But I really don't see him in there for the long term. And, you know, to be fair to Van Gaal, his CV is great, so is Mourinho's. But this is Van Gaal smarting, I think, from his... You know, ultimate failure at Man United when he thought he was the king of the castle and they just outed him.
Craig, last one, and I mentioned before as you were coming on that we're kind of like making the turn now and heading down the stretch of the season. So you got a title race with two clubs within 2 points. You've got a battle for the top four where you've got four clubs, high profile clubs, all within a shout. You've got a relegation fight where, you know, 14th through 18th are separated by 5 points. What are you kind of most intrigued by as we head into the final eight games here?
I'm intrigued by. I think relegation is always intriguing in a sort of sadistic way. Primarily because I unfortunately spent a couple of years doing it at Derby County, and fortunately it was only a couple of years, but I tell you, it's tough. Tough down there and the pressure, and eventually we succumbed after 2 or 3 years of fighting, and you know, the club were relegated, and you know, it's been a bit of an up and down since then. But you know, the top four is interesting, of course it is, and it's tight, but the top two, I mean, two great clubs. You know, two great teams, both still battling in Europe, two fabulous managers, great styles of play. You know, Tottenham were in there for a bit, Andrew, as I'm sure you were well aware. And, you know, 6 weeks ago it looked like a different story, and they've just fell off a little bit or a lot, 15 points now. Great results against Dortmund, but it's going to come down to these top two. And, you know, a lot of talk about Bottle. But I don't see it that way, I have to be honest. I think if Liverpool don't win the league, it's because probably Manchester United... Well, it's because Manchester United would have... Man City will have better players. But it's going to be intriguing. You've got two managers that are, you know, positive and focused. And Liverpool seem as if they might just have got over that little sort of nervy patch. And maybe the front three have... Well, certainly Mane has, but maybe the other two are, and I know Firmino scored for Brazil in the friendlies, and Salah just coming through that little bit of a bad period by their standards, and that could be the big difference for them. And obviously the injury to the fullback is problematic, and see how Trent Alexander-Arnold is, and they've got a big game against Tottenham Sunday. That's a huge stepping stone, the biggest one they've got apart from Chelsea. Then the run-in for Liverpool on paper looks not too bad. But that is intriguing to see how they're going to handle that against a City side that I think are a superior squad. I don't think there's any doubt about it. City have got a superior squad to almost anybody in Europe. So for Liverpool to pull this off would be huge.
Oh, here's hoping, Craig.
Yeah, Craig, JJ and I, because Tottenham and Liverpool are playing each other this weekend, we call it the Caught Offside Cup whenever that happens. And in honor of it, on tonight's show, we had promised our listeners that we would do a rap battle at one another, like kind of propping up our clubs and talking trash on the other. Do you have any advice on how we should go about this?
On what, sorry?
On rapping. You know, hip-hop.
So, Craig, just quickly, Memphis Depay, for some reason, went to the studio. I know he fancies himself as a rapper. And when he got, what was it, 5 million followers on Instagram or something like that, he decided to do a rap. And then the next thing, the one of the players, I think it was from Dunfermline, he made a mocking rap about how little he gets paid. And so it became a thing. And round about that time, for some reason, we agreed that we would do a rap battle when Spurs play Liverpool. I don't know if there was rap where you grew up in Scotland.
Well, I was, no, and I was listening to some rap in the car this morning. I think it was rap, but I've got no idea because I was taking my 15-year-old daughter to school and I keep telling her, what the hell are you listening to? It's rather worrying. I don't...
this is worrying, believe me.
I can't get down with these kids anymore. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't...
Craig, that's just about that is the oldest sentence I've ever heard. I don't look at you as an old man, but what you just said there was just so old sounding. I don't get down with the kids. I just can't.
I've finally admitted I'm in my 40s, and I've finally admitted I can't do it anymore. You know, I mean, I walk into a bar these days, and I feel as if I'm like, you know, I'm granddad. So God knows how Steve Nicol feels when he walks in. He's got to be great granddad, hasn't he? I mean, when he walks in,
I can tell you how he feels. Hungry.
Oh, well, listen, we're on the show last night. We're doing the AFC show last night, and we're running a bit late because the clocks in England at the moment, or the clocks in the UK at Britain, are only 4 hours behind.
Mm.
So the clocks are 4 hours. Is it no in front?
4 hours
so
ahead.
They haven't changed it. You're 4 hours ahead. So you know we were running a bit late. And all he, and in between the segments, all he kept saying was, "Well, I've got to drop the car off because it needs to. It's had a recall, so I've got three options on the way back: I either go for a meal, or I get a takeaway, or I wait till I get home before I eat." So there's a man, listen, that's only got one thing on his mind. Trust me,
well,
and that is. That's to fill that big belly full of as much calorie and congested food as he can.
Oh, poor guy. Well, hey, Craig, we appreciate your time as always. And afterwards, if you want a free lesson into the hip-hop game, just download this podcast.
No, I don't. I don't. I have 10 minutes of driving to school in the morning. I can assure you I have got absolutely... I give me the Eagles. Is that how old I am? Listen, I went to an Eagles concert recently. That's telling you everything you need to know.
Ah, Christ, Craig, you're in your 40s listening to the Eagles. That's ridiculous.
Correct. I'm Eagles. I'm all Eagles'd up, so you can stick your rap where the sun doesn't shine.
Wow.
Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, boys.
Oh, our thanks to Craig. Yep.
You can stick your rap.
So he's not going to be... So he will not be tuning in to what is about to happen.
Can't think of a Scottish rapper, to be fair.
No, but... Yeah, I've also...
Little Haggis.
Let's see, before we've got what to watch for in a sec. Do we have a mailbag today, JJ?
Yeah, we have a mailbag.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. This podcast is jam-packed. You also have something over there for the people, do you not?
I do indeed. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? How will you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? I ask you, do you want a bald spot to pop up, or do you want to do something about it first? 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Oh, those gas stations. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room. No awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. Our listeners will get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. Restrictions apply. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/offside. That's 4hims.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. Don't go bald.
No. There is another way. What to watch for time, JJ, the Premier League. This weekend, Saturday, 8:30 a.m., Fulham and Manchester City. And now Fulham's defending, I thought, maybe was a little bit better against Liverpool.
Certainly more organized under Scott Parker, international England hero.
But this, I mean, poor Fulham. Like Liverpool, Man City, back-to-back?
Yeah.
God.
Why didn't they spend some money in other areas of the field other than up front?
Hey, Callum Chambers, JJ. Callum Chambers. By the way, we spoke a lot about what happened with England kind of off the field, but we didn't really talk about some of what we saw on it, and that is Raheem Sterling taking his club form to the international level and just, like, no drop-off whatsoever. He's sensational, and right now, I believe in the league, no player so far this season has combined for more goals when you tally up goals plus assists. He's been sensational, and you could maybe say he's the in his current form, he might be the best player in the league right now.
You can say that, absolutely. And the thing about the Montenegro game was they had to roll up their sleeves after a bad start, and he was integral to that, constantly running at the Montenegro defence and wearing them down. And it turned what could have been a potentially tricky night into a very easy night for England. And
this off their previous match in which he tallied a hat-trick.
Yeah.
You know, the knock on him was always his finishing ability. Oh, you know, he's quick on the ball. He can get in space. But, you know, when it gets down to him and the keeper, it's just like the quality's not there. That narrative is starting to disappear.
Yeah. He's still not.
Well, he's not an out-and-out striker.
No, exactly. So, you know, but there was always the kind of frustration, particularly for England. And even in the World Cup, I think, was it against Sweden where he spurned a few chances and people threw their hands in the air? But he actually had a brilliant game there, and he's even in better form right now.
Well, what has he got right now? In 30 games for Manchester City, he scored 15 goals, and he has 9 assists. So he's doing something right, that's for sure. Saturday, 11 a.m., Manchester United and Watford. JJ, Nemanja Matic says that if Solskjaer and his staff, they need to be back next year. He has come out with his support for this group. Would it be a morale blow to members of Manchester United if they are not?
Briefly, but professional footballers are strange things. As long as the new manager comes in and picks them, that is the most important part.
And that check clears.
I wouldn't be...
It's all about the money.
The check's important, as it should be. They are paid professionals, but it's more the fact that they are wanted by the manager and are going to start in their preferred position. That is always what kind of ultimately sets the tone, and winning as well. So morale boost might be a little bit strong.
There are some rumors that you're starting to see with Paul Pogba and Manchester United and Real Madrid potentially.
And things he's saying out of his mouth.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I thought if Mourinho were still there, obviously Pogba, I would completely understand his desire to leave. I thought maybe with the uptick in form for the club, with whatever they're going to do in the upcoming transfer window, I'm assuming it will be something big. It is Manchester United, after all. I thought maybe he'd want to stay, but I don't know. It's starting to seem more and more like he wants to go to Real Madrid. And with what you're hearing about Gareth Bale at Real Madrid, I could see, I don't know, it's not hard for me to envision some kind of swap plus some, you know, some sort of maybe finances along with it. But
yeah, but it's hard to see how United, again, United would not be getting the best out of that deal at all. And I think, but what I wonder is...
Well, I think they would need to get some money too.
I'd need to study Zidane on Pogba, and I haven't done that. But I would wonder, is Zidane looking to remodel a midfielder and attack with someone like Pogba? Could be interesting.
What are the clubs really that can take Gareth Bale right now? Because it does, like I said, it seems more and more like he's going to leave. And when you think about where he could potentially go... like, who can afford him?
Well, if the Court of Arbitration for Sport can suspend Chelsea's window transfer ban, then that's a possible landing place for him. But they're limited to the super clubs with the super money.
Right.
Manchester City, they wouldn't want any part of Gareth Bale, I would imagine. Manchester United, Chelsea, and PSG. That's it.
That's what I would think too.
I
hear all the nostalgic talk about Tottenham. They're moving into this new stadium, but I just don't see any way in which they can afford those wages. That's just not how they do business.
I also think probably Inter Milan or one of the Italian teams could do that. One of the big Italian teams.
Okay, let's see. JJ, Sunday 9:05, Cardiff City and Chelsea, in what is now a pretty big game for Chelsea. All of these are
an enormous game for Cardiff too.
Yeah, as they are kind of clinging right now.
You wouldn't want to go on 538 and check their SPI out. That's
well,
all I'd say.
They're 18th on 28 points, and then just above them are Burnley and Southampton, who each have 30. So, look, there's still a lot of time left. Cardiff also have a match at hand on Burnley.
Yeah.
Cardiff have played 30. Burnley have played 31. It's not over, but, yeah, this is a tough one. I don't think this is necessarily one where they expect to gain points from. But we'll have to see. And then, JJ, there's this. Sunday at 11:30, the Caught Offside Cup, Liverpool and Tottenham. Oh. Do you have, like, that feeling in your stomach right now?
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about the game because...
I'm at the rap battle.
Oh, no, wait. Can I first talk about the...
yeah, of
it's
course.
Double nerves.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you feel like it's a must-win for Liverpool at home in the context of the title race. And my other nerves is from the rap battle. This is going to be bad, let's be honest.
It really is. Before we get to that, I did want to say one thing about Harry Kane. We're talking about Pogba rumors. We're talking about Gareth Bale rumors. And Harry Kane, like, thankfully, has kind of remained under the radar in terms of that, which for the life of me, I can't understand why, but I'm totally cool with it. But he was interviewed by ESPN. He spoke a little bit about this, you know, the idea of leaving for like a Real Madrid. He said, "I've always said as long as the club, Tottenham, is moving in the right direction and showing the right ambition, I want to be a part of the journey." What does that mean exactly? Like, what one person's idea of showing the right ambition, like, is just building a 62,000 seat stadium showing the right ambition? Or do they need to, like, change their transfer policy and, you know, sign humans?
You're standing all over content that's going to be in my rap.
You're such a nozzle. Then you know what?
I almost don't want to say anything.
We'll save your take. You want to just rap it to me?
Oh,
we'll
sure.
Save your takes on that for what is about to transpire. So we head now from Caught Offside Towers. We're up on, like, the 80th floor, but now we head downstairs into the Caught Offside Towers basement where a crowd is gathering, JJ, for the battle that is set to ensue.
We're down in the bunker.
Yeah.
It's grimy.
Mm-hmm.
Condensation on the walls. An air of anticipation. Almost a crackle in the room. Because they know there's two guys who can spit lyrics like there's no tomorrow.
Yep.
About to enter their midst. Two of the whitest men ever seen at such an event.
Should we flip a coin to see who goes first here?
You go first.
No. We'll flip.
All right.
Tails.
Oh.
It's heads. You go first.
All right.
Here we go.
Away we go.
This is, does this need any introduction or are you just ready to go?
No, I'm just ready to go.
Spitfire?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
While Spurs may have top four in the palm of their hands, they still might drop it. And Daniel Levy is never opening up his pockets. Your new NFL stadium, stop it. You want a brand new home, but buddy, that ain't it. There is nothing in that stadium but a lot of dreaming. What you gonna do now? Harry Kane has started to talk about leaving. Dele Alli, Eriksen, Vertonghen, Pochettino. When they gone, then what's the plan? Your new stadium is your only satisfaction, damn. Andrew Gunling always grumbling, he goes droning on, trying to convince y'all Spurs are relevant, he comes on too strong. You ever stop and wonder why the pod's too long? That's cause old Spursy Andy keeps singing the same old song. We making progress, playing better, our promise is plenty. Child, please, that's why your trophy cabinet's empty. Now everybody gather round, Bobby Moe and Manny going to town, for the annual beatdown. Lads, it's Spurs, lads, it's Spurs, lads, it's Spurs.
Ow!
Vicious attack.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All credit
to... You made it personal.
All credit to the late, great Mac Miller.
You made it personal.
So It Goes is the beat from his album Swimming.
All right. I see you. You ready?
I'm excited.
For the response?
For Lil Jeezy.
Here we go. Offside Cup, yeah, see the score.
but look a little deeper, then you'll learn much more. I'm checking out the table for the last 9 years. Spurs on top 8 times, man, we're hardly even peers. You ahead this time, I'm supposed to be in pain? Man, keep your Mo Salah, I'll ride with Harry Kane. Yeah, I know our trophy case is bare, it's hilarious. Just about as funny as Lawrence Carrius. So when the Spurs go marching in, you know you start to shudder. I see your title challenge is starting to sputter. Meanwhile, we keep getting told that our drop-off is coming. Wembley, no signings, but Tottenham keeps on humming. Dele Alli, Eriksen, our attack is never done. And once you think you gotta stop, here comes the sun. Anfield last year, you took that Wanyama blast, lined it up and sent it out like it's a podcast. You think Klopp's impressive next to Poch? He's a hack. Maurizio turned Trippier into England's right back. You mock our new ground because it got a cheese room. We'll eat Gouda all day and still lower the boom. I'll give you this, your cop ends a nice looking stand, but uh-oh, ours has got you beat by over $5,000. That caught offside cup score got you feeling slide. Devaney, please, I could care less. I'm Tottenham till I die.
It's impressive. I've been on the rap circuit for years, brought through a lot of great artists.
You don't mess with me.
No, I might try and sign you.
Who are you?
To Hard J Records.
The battle. I guess, should people vote?
I guess people have to vote. Should we should
put up a little poll on...
I'll put it on Twitter, because that's where we have the most amount of followers. Although, this is just as good a time as any to tell you, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. The interesting thing about our podcast is the amount of followers we have does not reflect the amount of downloads.
It's important to note that.
It is important to note that, because we're bad at social media.
People hate following us. They really do.
They do. But, I mean, our content is through the podcast. But if you go on Twitter, I'll put up a poll. I'll attach a poll to the tweet with the link to the podcast in it, and you can vote. I think, Andrew, you're going to crush me.
I don't know.
But, oh, I think so. Give you your credit. That was pretty good and pretty funny. And it also, you know, in terms of content, you give the people a lot. So
that was
cheap on Lawrence Carrius, though, you know, at this moment,
who's in completely
such a fraught situation at Besiktas.
You completely destroyed me for lengthening the podcast by blathering on. How dare you? I'll take shots at Lawrence Carrius if I want.
Yeah,
you got some nerve.
Anyway,
look at you. You look like Papa Doc right now. I feel like B Rabbit. I just took you down.
Prediction.
Cheddar Bob pointing at me from the control room. That's right, CB. So there you have it. The battle.
Yeah. Well, one thing that was disappointing is we didn't have any producers to shout at.
Yeah, you're right.
You know the way.
Now, this was entirely
You know the way Fat Joe will just scream about why his mic isn't on.
Yeah. We have no producers, but a large crowd was able to gather here nevertheless.
Yeah, in the basement.
That's just bare bones. Yeah. Just a straight up basement rap battle. Man, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Well, we'll see who's the winner.
We will. We will see. Before we get out of here, I do want to tell you about a new podcast that people might enjoy. Laughter Permitted, Julie Foudy is the host. So check out the new podcast, Laughter Permitted. She talks with a bunch of different like trailblazers in sports and things. Not actual Portland trailblazers, like people who blaze trails in the sports world.
I think people were pretty clear on that.
This week she talks to 2-time Olympic medalist and Sunday Night Baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza.
Oh, wow.
So with baseball season starting, people might think that that's pretty cool.
And those of you who are Mets fans should listen very closely, as Jessica is now part of the organization.
Yeah, and I've been assured on Laughter Permitted this week there will be laughs and there will be donuts. I don't know what that means. I haven't listened yet, but I'm curious.
Foudy gets everything.
I'm curious.
We don't get donuts.
No, I know. But you know what else we get? JJ, we get Harry's Razors. No, we don't. They should send us some Harry's razors.
Yeah, why don't we get any of this stuff?
Quite frankly, I can be honest.
I'll take the razors because I need to shave.
We both have I recently trimmed, but I could use an actual legit razor to get my like neck hair, my Coy Detmer neck hair and all that.
You should get the Hims and I'll take the razors.
You got to join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. You can claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/offside. Why Harry's, you ask? Well, Harry's founders were tired of paying up for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. They knew a great shave doesn't come from gimmicks like vibrating heads and flex balls or handles that look like spaceships, tactics that the leading brand has used to raise prices for decades. No, they fixed that by combining a simple, clean design with quality, durable blades at a fair price. They've received over 20,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot and Google. And Harry's replacement cartridges are just $2 each. That's half the price of the Gillette Fusion Pro Shield. All Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know. They'll give you a full refund. So here's what you do. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. Oof. Listeners of this show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/offside. Make sure you go to harrys.com/offside to redeem your offer and let them know that we sent you to help support the show. Because when you type in like the offside part, it gets a little like little tick for the offside column, caught offside column.
Yeah, basically.
So it makes them think that we're actually doing what we're supposed to be doing, and that is getting you to purchase these cool products.
Support the pod by supporting them.
Yep. Oh, so there you go, man. I mean, we had other stuff, but I just feel like it should just end now.
So much
like,
stuff got canned.
Just end.
Mailbag, Ray Carr's man of the match had to go.
I got to be honest. Like, I'm genuinely curious. After this...
EPL, back for more.
When I recorded that, and I listened back to it, I was like, uh-oh. Like, I knew right away this is going to be a disaster.
I
don't know how this battle will be received.
This will be received well by the critics,
curious.
By people out there. Yours is very good.
And it all covers up the fact that we got a game this weekend, and I'm super pumped.
Yeah, a score prediction?
I will say, I mean, how could I have just, like, said all that stuff and then not come out here and say 3-0 Spurs?
I know. I mean, people are going to be upset that actual rapper DJ Little Gundy didn't tell the truth.
I'll go 3-0.
3-0 Spurs?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, my God.
Why not?
It's going to be 3-1 Liverpool.
Joke.
Actually, I don't see you scoring. 3-0.
All right. Well, hey, this was fun, man. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Like we said, you can vote
on Twitter.
The At CO Soccer Pod Twitter page. We'll have that poll up for, I guess we'll leave it up for a few days. And, tell your friends, too.
Absolutely. Word of mouth, support our sponsors, and thank you for getting through this podcast. And apologies, we will get to your...
This was fun, man. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.